taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I'm glad you could join me today. You know, it's interesting. I've been meeting several people lately through my different activities here with the Constitution Study. And it's always interesting to see how they approach the Constitution or what they see is going on in America today. And this grasp for what do we do? I was at a local meeting here this morning, and I had three people that I was talking to. It's like, oh, this is great. This is it. We'd like to learn more. And it was really interesting because two of them really wanted to focus on educating children, which, by the way, I love. I love getting up in front of children and teaching them about the Constitution. You know, one of the earlier things that I did a couple of years ago, almost 3 years ago now, I was invited to go up to Bismarck, North Dakota, to teach a group of students a primer on the Constitution. Now, you may remember, I live outside of Nashville, Tennessee. This is not a neighborhood call, but I had somebody pay to fly me up to Bismarck, North Dakota, and there was about 150, 170, mostly high school students, some of their parents, a couple of middle school students, and we spent an entire day discussing the Constitution, and it was great. It was wonderful. I speak at and I have a booth at several homeschool conferences, and I love the approach because it seems like people are hungry. They know something is wrong, and they're hungry for what do we do to fix it, and can this help? So that was the mindset when I came across these articles I want to talk to you about today, and thinking about, you know, looking at our country and saying, is this still the land of the free and the home of the brave? Are we still living in a country that can truly call itself both free and brave? So I wanted to take a look at what's been going on, a few examples of what's been going on, and see how this could be called into question. Let's start with a simple question. Imagine it's early morning, I believe this is actually pre-dawn, and you wake up to hear this.
I'm sorry, so what is this regarding?
This is a search warrant. Open up. What
you just heard was an audio clip from a video of a raid being conducted on a journalist. A Project Veritas journalist. Now, the video can be disturbing, and I will put the link in the description when this program ends up on the website. But the story behind this is very interesting. You see, Project Veritas has become known for, well, truth. I mean, this is what Veritas means. They record undercover videos and make it public. The issue at hand was a diary purportedly to be the property of Ashley Biden, daughter of now President Joe Biden, and at the time of the original incident, candidate Joe Biden. Now, there apparently are reports that there's some less than pleasant things, less than good things to be said about Joe Biden in this diary. And this was received by Project Veritas. They didn't go seeking it. It was provided to them, and they decided not to publish it. As I understand it, they did so because they couldn't verify its authenticity and that it was a legitimate source. So they worked with local law enforcement to return the diary to its alleged owner, Ashley Biden. Apparently that wasn't good enough for the Department of Justice and the FBI, because search warrants were issued and multiple employees of Project Veritas were raided. And if you listen to the audio, just imagine you wake up one morning and there's pounding at your door. You ask, what's this resorting to? It's a search warrant. Just open up. This is a scary time. And I have spent time thinking, what do you do in that situation? Because you have men, you assume armed men, just outside your door claiming to have a search warrant. You don't know if the search warrant's valid. All you know is that men are pounding on your door, apparently from the government, that want to search your place. Now, as a husband and a father, I don't want to be put in danger, and I certainly don't want to put my family in danger. So that's got to be part of the calculus. But I also know that I have rights. Now, in watching this video, they opened the door. They demanded the occupant show them his hands. Now, understand, they do this for their safety while they are pointing guns, if not directly at him, in his general direction. That is a very scary and uncomfortable situation because, A, if these aren't actually law enforcement, or if the law enforcement's trigger happy, this could get very ugly very quickly. Now, if I, again, I watched the video. It looks like they actually, I'm not sure if they handcuff the resident or not. They do have him sit. They do inform him that he doesn't, that he is not being taken into custody, but he's sitting with an agent and is told that he doesn't have to talk to the agent. And they do say that for their safety and for his, they want him to sit down, and I can kind of understand that. But just imagine, I want you to put yourself in that situation of having done nothing wrong. We're not talking a criminal. We're not talking about the corner drug dealer. We're not talking about somebody who's committed murder. We're talking about a reporter living their life, or any citizen living your life peacefully, being confronted with this situation, and to be honest, no real method of defending yourself against this. Now, they had a search warrant. The question I really want to know is, my first question is, I want to see the search warrant. Right, so the first things that are running through my mind is, I want my lawyer, I want to see the search warrant, right? Show me. Give me a copy of the search warrant because I need evidence as to whether or not this is legitimate or not, right? But I cannot imagine what was going through this person's mind. But this level, again, we're not talking about going after a hardened criminal. We're talking, at best, somebody who is in possession of property, at best, inappropriately acquired. And they assume they have it in their home. This wasn't a raid on the Project Veritas offices. This was a raid on an employee's home. I'm sorry. This smacks of intimidation. This just, it smells of attempting to intimidate people. Again, because Project Veritas has already said, yes, we have received this. No, we are not publishing it. Yes, we are trying to return it to its lawful owner. And this is the response. Now, I have had a visit from the FBI, and it went much nicer than this one. I let me tell you, I was served a subpoena for a federal case. Now, it was interesting because the first thing I got was a phone call from someone saying, this is so-and-so with the FBI, please call me back. Being a somewhat suspiciously minded person, the first thing I did was take that phone number, go to a search engine, you punch in the phone number, it gives you any information that's available about that number. It was listed as known spam phone number, so I ignored it. I get another voicemail a couple days later, different number, also claiming to be the FBI. I take that number, I put it in a search engine. Hey, guess what? It is an FBI office in a neighboring city. I call them up. They say, yes, Mr. Engel, We have a subpoena for you. We wanted to call you beforehand. We wanted you to know that we were coming. Is there a good time for us to come and serve this subpoena? And I said, thank you very much. Appreciate that. We set a time. They drove out. Two agents could get out of their big black SUV, both of them armed, both of them wearing their badge. They come over, they hand me the subpoena, they give me some information about the subpoena. One of them tried to engage in small talk. I said, I appreciate that, but I don't engage in small talk with law enforcement that I don't know. I don't know this person. But I mean, they were polite. There was no, but I truly appreciated the fact that they called beforehand. This is, you know, they didn't just show up. Guys with guns didn't just show up at my door. Men with badges didn't just show up and knock on the door. They gave fair warning. Again, they're serving a subpoena. They're not conducting a search warrant. But still, we're not talking about somebody that knocks on the door and says, excuse me, sir, we have a warrant to search this locale. These men are pounding on the door. You look at some of the video, and again, I'll put the link up to the video so that you can see it for yourself. You're seeing men in masks. Granted, they are mostly surgical masks, but, you know, There's a very intimidating look to all of this. And it makes me think not of the land of the free and the home of the brave. This reminds me of more like Stalin's Russia or Hitler's Germany or Mao's China, Pol Pot's Cambodia, Kim's North Korea. We have a piece of paper that says we have been given a legitimate reason to enter your property, but we're coming in hard. We're coming in strong. In other words, the FBI created a confrontational situation. Now, after they gained entry, they calmed down. They were much more, it was a much lower intensity. They were more polite, but they initiated a conflict, an armed conflict, whether they had their arms out or not. These are armed men attempting to enter a home based on a piece of paper. The FBI created this, a potentially lethal conflict for a search warrant, for a diary, for a nonviolent crime. That's the part that bothers me. Now again, I want to see the search warrant. I want to see, where's the probable cause? Where's the oath or affirmation? Where's the specifics about what you're searching for and where you're allowed to search? Where are the details? Because that to me is what's important, the details. Is it a valid warrant? If all you're coming to do is search my house, why are you pounding on my door at what I believe to be in a pre-dawn raid? Where's the justification for that? To me, it just seems like an attempt at intimidate. So I would recommend each and every one of you stop and consider and talk to your family about how you would react in such a situation. And again, I've said, I've thought about this. I've thought about what I would say. I've thought about what I would do. This journalist had a camera on them. They recorded their side of the incident so that now we know about it. But I have talked to my family. I've talked to my family about what they should do should a government actor appear at our door, about the requirements for warrants and not inviting them in, not preventing them if they come in, but not inviting them in, about how to maintain your rights without endangering yourself. You know, you let the bully come in. You deal with the legality after the fact. Because in that situation, law enforcement is trained not to lose control of a situation like that. If they're coming in hard like that, this is not a no-knock warrant, but this is about one step below that. If they're coming in hard, they are looking for resistance and they will react badly. And if you haven't thought about this beforehand, it is easy for you to get caught up in the situation, make an innocent move that doesn't look good to the officer, and something tragic to happen. But this is also another reason why we need to support those that are standing up and saying, no, this type of action, this intimidation should be punished. I don't know why these FBI agents decided, and again, as I'm not sure about it, but I believe, if I understand other reporting, these were pre-dawn raids. Why are they doing it pre-dawn? You're not after hardened criminals. Where's the justification for these search warrants? Why are they being handled in such an aggressive manner? Those are questions that need to be answered. And those that are responsible for escalating situations in this way need to be held accountable. Now, there are much less serious situations that, well, let's say some in government have much more foolish responses as to how to deal with it. Now, you may have heard about some of the recent stories, for example, the FDA wanting 75 years to release the safety documentation they used to justify the emergency use authorization of some of the quote-unquote vaccines, about other officials that have been withholding certain information or making it very difficult to get certain information from government officials, especially those in Washington. And to the rescue comes Senator Joni Ernst of Iowa. Now, she said in a statement, "Iowans and all Americans have a right to know what's happening in Washington, but without proper supervision, our transparency laws are often more bark than bite." Yeah, okay, I would kind of give her that statement. I would not disagree with what she said so far. She went on, "As autocrats around the world from Russia to China try to crack down on citizens' freedom of information, my bill will ensure here in America we open our government to the public, and if the officials we pay with our tax dollars fully comply with our transparency laws." Now, I find this interesting because I thought the whole purpose of transparency laws were for things to be transparent, and we're finding out now they're not really transparent, but that just goes to prove that laws don't fix anything unless they're enforced. So what would this new law do to enforce the old law that apparently wasn't being enforced completely in Senator Ernst's eyes? Well, it's supposed to provide taxpayers with a comprehensive summary of the information they have a right to know and how to obtain it from the appropriate executive branch office, to review complaints about failures by an agency to comply with a federal transparency law and work with the Department of Justice Office of Information Policy in resolving them, and grade each agency annually on how to perform in the timeliness and completeness of information provided to the public under the Federal Freedom of Information Act and other regulations and statutes requiring transparency of government documents and operations. Oh, great. Well, just what we need. Another federal bureaucracy to tell us what we can learn from the federal bureaucracy. But here's the interesting part. They're going to create a new position within the White House to oversee the White House. They're going to call it the Director of Openness in Government. They're going to call it a dog. And this new position, again, spending more money to enforce the laws that are already supposed to be enforced, will be located within the White House Office of Management and Budget, meaning this position will report to the President of the United States. Yeah, the very guy that's overseeing the agency that's hiding the data, they're going to put the guy that's the office that says, here, you have to open up this data. Now, Senator Ernst, I give you credit for wanting to fix a problem. I do. But do you really think creating more bureaucracy in Washington is going to fix the bureaucratic stink in Washington? I have a much better idea. Try this one on for size. Since the federal government is a creation of the Constitution and its existence is dependent on the ratification of the states, how about we just have the state attorney generals be able to audit everything, every document the federal government has? The federal government is meant to be an employee, a servant of the states. How about we just let the states go in there and say, excuse me, if you are not following federal law, you get arrested and go to jail. Now, maybe the federal FOIA law does not include an actual punishment. How about you fix that? If FOIA doesn't have punishment for people who fail to comply with it, why don't you fix that? And if you need somebody to do that, well, all you need to do, we have law enforcement. If it's a federal crime for a member of an agency to not comply with federal information and transparency laws, then how about we just punish them for it? What a concept. Why do we really need new rules, new regulations, new bureaucracies, and new offices with new requiring new funding and new taxes to simply enforce the laws we've already created? See, I understand sunlight is the best disinfectant, and we want transparency in government. But I don't see how, if you have a windshield, and it's a dirty windshield, I don't see how throwing more dirt on it is going to make it any more transparent. Maybe for my friends that live up north, I remember getting up in the morning, and you'd have frost on the windshield, and you had to go out and scrape the frost off. Yes, it was unpleasant, it's uncomfortable, but it had to be done. You don't fix a frosted up windshield by throwing more frost on it. Yet, Senator Ernst believes the proper way to deal with a large bureaucratic government that is hiding information is to add more bureaucracy to it. Sorry, I just can't get on board with that. I think the question really is, do these federal transparency laws have any teeth to them? Is there a punishment for violating? If there is, then let's apply that punishment. If there is not, then, Senator Ernst, what you should be doing is fixing those laws so that there are teeth behind it. Allow individuals, allow states, don't actually forget, allow. Put into the code, this is the punishment for not producing information in a timely manner. Make it a criminal punishment. Make the individual responsible punishable for this. Not a question of, oh, well, they can sue and get money back. No, no, no. The individual responsible needs to be personally held accountable, whether that's personal fines or even other punishments. We need to make sure that our employees in government are personally responsible for their actions. And until we do that, all we're doing is throwing more mud on the windshield and wondering why we can't see. If we want transparency in government, there must be a punishment for not having transparency in government. And just as that should apply to FOIA laws and that, it should also apply to the law enforcement department. There should be transparency in the warrants. There should be transparency in the actions of the FBI, federal law enforcement, and the judges that issue these warrants. If the feds show up at your door with a warrant, there should be justification for the level of their actions. They should provide you the warrant and allow you to review it as they're entering the premises. Someone shows up and says, "Mr. Engel, we have a warrant. We have a search warrant. Open the door. Where's the warrant? Let me see the warrant. Let me see the scope of your authority to search and to seize." That should be open. If they come in pounding on the door, "Excuse me, show me the warrant," there should be a special case. It should be a special case that you don't hand over the warrant before you commit the search. Right? There should be special. I could see special situations for that. But again, that should be for a search to be reasonable. It's not simply that they have a warrant, but are they doing it in a reasonable fashion? And I think these are all things we need to consider as we are looking at these problems. What are the consequences to the FBI, not only in that they executed a search warrant, but how they executed a search warrant? Where is the transparency as to the decision as to why they did it that way? Where's the transparency to the judges that issued the search warrant? Where is the probable cause? Where is the oath or affirmation? Why, if you authorize them to do a no-knock or an aggressive raid, what was the justification for that? That it has to be transparent as well. And we don't get that by adding bureaucracy. I believe we get that by making sure that the people who violate the concept of reasonable, that violate the basic concept of human decency and how you treat your neighbor, that they're held accountable if they cannot show just cause. That to me is reasonable. Would it have been reasonable for the FBI to come up, knock on this person's door and say, search warrant, please open the door? Now, if they refuse to open the door, well, then maybe you get a bit more aggressive. But to start off in that aggressive stance is dangerous. It makes the situation more dangerous. The same way, if people in the government are not fulfilling the requirements of transparency laws like FOIA, okay, there's got to be punishments for the individual that does it. I think that's how we get to a more transparent society. I think that's how we get to more reasonable searches. And I think that's how we, moving forward, end up with a more transparent government, not adding more bureaucracy onto the system. So that's my opinion. Now, I have to take a break, but before I do, a couple things I want to bring to your attention. You know, we do a lot of work here trying to help inform others about the Constitution and our rights and what's going on. And there's a couple ways you can help, a couple ways you can join us. One way is to simply ask questions. I know people out there have questions, and very often they're reticent to ask them. They're afraid they're going to look foolish. There are no stupid questions. So go to constitutionstudy.com, click the Ask a Question button, ask your question, hit the checkbox if you'd like me to answer it on the radio. I am looking to for a bunch of questions to answer on the radio. I want to put together a Q&A segment, and I would love your questions. And if your question is interesting, if it's really engaging, maybe I'll actually interview on the radio and let you ask the question there rather than simply dealing with your email. So please ask questions. The other thing you do is share. You know, usually a day or two after these programs are heard on the radio, you can find them on the Constitution Study page of AmericaOutLoud.com. Share them. Put them on social media. Send them to friends and family. Help other people to learn about the Constitution Study, about this program, and about how they can find out more about protecting their rights and liberties. Those are two ways that you can help spread the word about freedom and liberty and help secure those blessings to yourself and to your neighbors and to your family. Now, another way you can do that is by going to HealthyCell.com. Why HealthyCell? Well, HealthyCell supports this program. We are here in large part because HealthyCell helps pay the bills so this can happen. So if you go to HealthyCell, you can actually get pill-free vitamins. They come in these little gel packs. They're easy to use, they're easy to take, and they really, really work. I use them, my family uses them. For example, I'm putting together a tour this summer where I'm going to be traveling around, and I know when I'm traveling, I have a hard time getting to sleep. So I will use their REM sleep product. It helps me get sleepy, fall asleep faster, stay asleep so I can awake rested and ready to go. Now, they have a lot of different products, but you can try any of them and get 20% off if you go to HealthyCell.com and use the code OUTLOUD. So try any of their products. Again, I'm today talking about REM sleep, but they've also got an immune system booster. They have focus and recall. They have a lot of different products. But if you use checkout, use that code OUTLOUD, they will give you 20% off your first order, and it tells HealthyCell that you listen to America Out Loud and that you listen to the Constitution Study and help continue to support this program. So if you can give us a likes, subscribes, shares, and then support the companies that are supporting us, that helps keep the Constitution Study on the air so I can keep bringing this information to you and you can enjoy it as we come back out of this break.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology, designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
As Americans, we seek to form a more perfect union. To paraphrase Abraham Lincoln, we are a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And God willing, we shall not perish from the earth. AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
In today's world, there's no escaping the headlines filled with warnings about emerging viruses and dangerous superbugs. Genesis is the only technology that safely and effectively obliterates harmful pathogens both on the air and on surfaces. Genesis plus HOCL neutralize these threats to your environment in just seconds. Find out more about this amazing technology at genesisfogger.com/outloud for a 15% discount. With Genesis, you'll be prepared for what's next.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, and we are looking at transparency in government. Now, the first half of the program, we talked about the FBI raid on the Project Veritas employees. We talked about the bill being presented by Senator Ernst to create more bureaucracy in an attempt to make government more transparent. That didn't seem to make a lot of sense. But there's some other things going on that really do have me concerned. See, there's an article out of Politico where they're talking about a senator, in this case, Senator Marshall from Kansas, who gave a tour of the Capitol the other week. Now, generally, apparently, the Capitol building still remains closed to the public, but as a senator, he apparently was able to give these people a tour. But you see, that isn't the story. You see, as Politico put it, that the Senator Marshall gave truckers in the so-called People's Convoy a tour of the Capitol last week. Listen, it's Politico. It's the media. I don't expect them to be fair and based and honest. But even that isn't, you know, the so-called People's Convoy. That's not even the story. The story is a senior congressional aide alerted the Department of Justice about the truckers' presence. See, now, if you disagree with the government and you're from a certain political side, then your mere presence in the Capitol warrants the investigation of the Department of Justice. Why did the congressional aide alert the Department of Justice? Well, they were concerned that the guided tour could help protesters plan an entry into the building. All right, this is just complete poppycock. This shows two very important things. It shows, A, your rights mean nothing to the people in Washington. They look at this and saying, ooh, people who are protesting all the lockdowns and stuff, They might see. We could have another January 6th. If that happens, the problem is not with the People's Convoy. It'd be the problem with the U.S. Capitol Police and whatever people decided to make unlawful entry. But the very idea that the people who represent us in Washington, I mean, here he is. He's a senator from Kansas. Several of the people in this group apparently live in Kansas. They are his constituents. And he gave them a tour. Now, let me ask you, do you think this would be different if it was, say a group of BLM activists? Do you think a congressional aide would have alerted the Department of Justice for that? How about a little transparency right now? How about that congressional aide be investigated for denying people a right protected by the Constitution? You see, the people's convoy, the people in that convoy, have a right to peaceably assemble, guaranteed by the First Amendment. And since it says Congress shall make no law, guess what? It applies to Congress. Yet here we have an aide alerting the Department of Justice. Now, did the Department of Justice do anything with this alert? I don't know. It's not in the article. But there are other things that are really important. You see, the Capitol Police have been preparing for the truckers to show up. It's not exactly like it was a surprise. They've been driving from Southern California in the longest of these convoys. Capitol Police have been preparing. They actually brought in 700 National Guard members to assist the police. Truckers didn't even spend the night protesting. They had a fence put up. Didn't matter. And what's interesting is, since this past December, the Senate has been allowed to give public tours to small groups in limited areas on the Senate side, with a limit of, you know, two tours per week, which, according to the Marshal's Office, the truckers complied with. Right? These people have done absolutely nothing wrong. They have violated no law. They have made no threat except to a tyrant that doesn't like being disagreed with, but they get turned into the department, an alert of the Department of Justice, because they exercise their right to petition their government to peaceably assemble and to take a tour on public property. I mean, what does it mean that you're only allowed to exercise your rights if you abide or you agree with a certain political standard? You have a convoy that is protesting the illegal COVID restrictions, and they are turned in for showing up and getting a tour. Funny, I don't remember people being so upset when BLM and Antifa were actually committing violence in the streets of Washington, D.C. You have people protesting the fact that states fraudulently appointed presidential electors. They're referred to as insurrectionists. I don't remember the same thing being called of people who actually were trying to overturn the government, trying to shut down the government. I even had a comment on social media the other day saying, you know, anybody, if a state disagrees with the federal government, if it places itself above the laws of Congress, that's secession. No, it's not. It's not secession. It's not insurrection. It is applying the supreme law of the land, in the case of the states, to their own creation. But again, since we're not taught what the Constitution says, we're not taught it in schools, it's not taught in law schools. I met another lawyer today, and I asked her, hey, when you were in law school, did you study the Constitution or constitutional law? She says, no, we studied constitutional law. Like, we don't know the Constitution. And we see these types of actions as like, oh, tis, tis, tis. No, I want to know, where's the reprimand for that congressional aide that decided to alert the Department of Justice? And if the Department of Justice did something, again, it wasn't in the political report whether or not the Department of Justice actually did anything. But if now you're only allowed to exercise your rights if you agree with a certain political stand, It, only if you support tyranny are you allowed to exercise your rights. Then, no, we're not the land of the free anymore. And if the actions of government make you afraid to exercise your right, and you cease to exercise them because of that fear, then we're not the land of the home of the brave either. See, this is what happens with this whole toxic environment of comply or else. It's the FBI brute squads. It's the, we can't actually oversee government. We just need more government to fix government. It's the, you know, you're allowed to exercise your rights, but if you disagree with us on the wrong stuff, well, we will just, we'll turn you over to the Justice Department. This is a toxic situation. And sadly, this isn't all. Sadly, sorry, folks, there's more. I mean, what happens from a society that teaches people to hate others because of the color of their skin? That says all your problems are because somebody else oppressed you, somebody that never lived while you did. That it's all the other person, to judge people solely by the color of their skin. To hate people because of the color of their skin. Well, it appears there's a case that says four middle school students in Broward County, Florida, found out. See, these four boys are allegedly victims of a hate crime. Now, one of the victims, and again, not identified because they're a minor, says he no longer feels safe going to school. Why? Well, he told NBC that five boys assaulted him and his friends and told them it was revenge for what they did in the 1700s slavery. We're in the 21st century, folks. And allegedly, five boys attacked four other boys for something they didn't even do. That it was revenge for something they don't even know if their ancestors did. Now, here's the interesting part. The five alleged assailants, where three of them were black, two of them were white. One of them reportedly yelled, "It's opposite day, brown power," while they whipped and kicked and hit four apparently innocent boys simply because they were white. You wonder why children are terrified to go to school? This is a racial, this is a hate crime. They were attacked for the color of their skin. Now the attackers, the alleged attackers, were ages between 12 and 15. And they've been arrested and charged with battery and a hate crime. My question is, why did it have to get so far? Why can't we recognize that, yes, in the 1700s, slavery was a fact. It was required by British law that while many people in the colonies supported slavery, many, many, many more were opposed to slavery. And while we are not perfect, we were the first country in the world to legally ban the slave trade. We were the first country to pass legislation banning the slave trade. The only reason the British actually implemented their legislation before us, even though we passed it first. But what happens when we teach people to hate others because of the color of their skin? This is what happens. This is what happens. This is the racist country that comes from things like CRT type education. And as if being attacked for the color of your skin isn't bad enough, one of the parents said his son is still being abused at school for reporting the assault. Wait a second. He was assaulted at school And people are calling him a snitch for reporting it and doing the right thing. Doing the legal thing. Reporting an assault. This is what happens. This is why we did not send my daughter to public school. It wasn't nearly this bad. But you're telling me that not only did these five children attack four other children, but now people in the school are blaming the victims. This is a tragedy. It's a tragedy, not simply that there was an attack at school. Sadly, that is not unheard of. It shouldn't be, but it is. But the fact that we have trained our young people to hate others based on the color of their skin. I thought I had lived to see the day when that was a thing of the past. It is not. We are still teaching our children to be racist. And this is just another example. As we watched racist attacks diminish, here they come roaring back again. The fact that children were taught to hate someone based on the color of their skin should be disgusting to every freedom-loving person. But I was reading this article in the New American, and they went on and said, in fairness, the reported attack was brief and accorded with the norms of typical boyish mischief in that the violence was mild and no serious injuries were sustained. Baloney. I'm sorry. If there's a time for an expletive, that is it. It is never normal to attack a person because of the color of their skin. It is never normal. It is never simply boyish mischief. That is the type of hogwash that led to racism in so many estates being kept around from generation to generation. As we were taught, it is okay to be a racist. It is okay to injure somebody. It is okay. Oh, they're just boyish mischief. No. No. That, whether it's racial or not, you do not attack somebody simply because you don't like them or you disagree with them. You can defend yourself from an attack, but if you initiate an attack, that is wrong. And the idea that they're going to, that whoever said that the report attack was normal, the whitewashing, the covering up of this racist attack, makes you just as complicit. You're an accessory. You're saying it's okay. It's not a big deal. Now, I'm glad that there were no serious injuries, at least physical injuries. But the mental injuries that have been inflicted are not mild. When you have students that are afraid to go to school, when you have students being harassed for actually reporting an assault, those are not norms. Any place where that is normal is not a free country. That may be normal may have been normal in the Soviet Union. It may have been normal in Nazi Germany. It may even be normal in North Korea or communist China. That should not be normal in any free country. And the fact that there are those who are ready to write it off as just boyish mischief is the reasons why we are still dealing with racism in the 21st century. Now, there's one more article, and this is a bit tangential, but stick with me. I think it'll make sense because it shows the state of rights and transparency and openness that has disappeared from this country. So back in November 2019, there was an incident. See, somebody at the University of North Texas left a stack of flyers in the faculty lounge. Now, and this, these flyers were a warning against microaggressions. Now, according to the complaint, there was a complaint filed. You see, one teacher wrote on the chalkboard, "Don't leave garbage lying around," with an arrow pointing to the stack of these things, the microaggressions. Now, what did this these flyers complain about? It says, well, they called it microaggression to say things like, "America is a melting pot," or "I believe the most qualified person should get the job." Oh, and don't forget this one. "America is a land of opportunity." Why? Well, apparently they supposedly propagate the myth of meritocracy and promote colorblindness. So now the idea of not judging people by the color of their skin is now considered a microaggression. Now, the people who put out this flyer, absolutely within their rights to do so. This is their opinion. Nathan Hares, however, who is an adjunct professor, was an adjunct professor at the time, he has rights of free speech too. He can point at this garbage. And for doing so, the math department pressured him to apologize for his views and to attend extra diversity training, which he declined. See, the public university terminated his employment specifically because he expressed an opinion that contradicted a currently politically advantageous position. And he sued. Now, the case is just getting started. A federal district judge is allowing the case to go forward. And as he said that in his, when he wrote about this, he said the case boils down to a single question. What can a public employee say, and what can he choose not to say without fear of reprisal from his employer? Now, I originally looked at this because of the case, because it's a simple freedom of speech case. Is the government in the form of the University of North Texas going to restrict certain types of speech simply because they don't find them advantageous? But as I was reading this in the context of the other classes, of the other stuff, I said, look at what we're saying here. The University of North Texas, it being a public school, encourages the idea that colorblindness is a microaggression, that the most qualified person should get the job, that America is a melting pot. That is considered unsafe and not allowed on campus. Disagreeing with it is also not allowed on campus. Tell me, the students at the university in the math department at the University of North Texas are not being trained to be racist. Tell me, the University of North Texas is not willing to infringe on the rights of a professor who disagrees with the current politically advantageous position of racism. Tell me that's not the case. It's right here. Now, I actually want to follow this complaint because my guess is this is going to go on for a while. But what does it say when a public university says we will not judge people by the content of their character, but by the color of their skin? And we will punish anyone who disagrees with that, any staff member who disagrees. You don't have the right of free speech in the University of North Texas mathematics department. Not according to the school. You don't have the right to disagree that people should be judged by the color of their skin. Not in the University of North Texas, at least not in their math department. See, I look at this and I see not simply a freedom of speech case. I see an underlying cancer running through our society. The cancer of not simply racism, but hatred of people who are different. Hatred of the other. Again, the person who left those flyers is perfectly within their rights to do so. I think they're wrong. This Professor Harris thinks they're wrong. But you notice, Professor Ayers didn't try to get that person thrown off campus. He didn't destroy the flyers. He made a comment about the flyers. And for that, he was fired. He was told, either you go through re-education or get fired. Because what they say, the department pressured him to apologize. Apologize for what? What he said was his point of view. They want him to attend extra diversity training. How about the diversity of listening to someone with a different point of view? This is what college campuses have become. Not all of them. But my guess is this is not the outlier. This is not the only incident. I've seen too many other cases where freedom of speech is trampled on campus. So what do we do? Well, we understand that public schools are just that, public. That includes the public universities. And if we do not require that our elected officials rein this in, if we let this cancer continue to fester and to metastasize, it will take over this country. It is already in the process of taking over this country. This is a metastasizing cancer. And if we don't cut it out, if we don't demand that you allow people differing points of view, then we're going to die from it. This cancer is spreading throughout this country. Just like the cancer of using government intimidation tactics, of assaulting people because of the color of their skin and writing it off as typical boyish mischief, of raiding, getting the federal government, giving the government to raid those who disagree with you, and putting all your answers in the hands of government. Abraham Lincoln said, "The people are the rightful masters of both Congresses and courts, not to overturn the Constitution, but to overturn the men who pervert it." Ladies and gentlemen, it is time we be the masters of all our public officials, all those who hold office, all those who work for us in government, not to overturn the Constitution, but to get rid of those who pervert it. Just a reminder, all of my shows typically go to podcast a day or two after they're heard on the radio. You can find them on Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart, basically anywhere you get your podcasts. Now, please give me a rating, give me a subscription. If you can do that on Apple, that would be great. It'll help others find the Constitution and spread the blessings of liberty.
Maybe you'll stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.